Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations. Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thanks for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where the sun is out, 60 degrees, on our way to a predicted high of 62, calm winds, mostly cloudy skies overnight tonight with a low around 50, and for tomorrow, a 60% chance of rain, mainly after 4 p.m. Increasing clouds tomorrow, and for tomorrow night, rain could be heavy at times, 100% chance of rain for tomorrow night. Coming up on the Midday Report, a cyber attack did some serious damage to the state health department systems. Now it's tough to get a birth certificate. A local teenager has been arrested in connection with a series of arson attacks near Fairbanks. And the Chum Salmon Run is low in Kotzebue, joining the King Run. A story on what local officials are doing about it.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Sang. Search and rescue efforts are underway in southeast Louisiana in the wake of Hurricane Ida, which left scores of people stranded by floodwaters. At least two people are confirmed dead. Governor John Bel Edwards said during his virtual meeting today with President Biden that more than a million homes and businesses are without power, but he believes the number of people without electricity right now may be closer to 2 million. Here's NPR's Debbie Elliott.
There's catastrophic damage to the power grid, 911 systems, and cellular services, including in New Orleans. But Mayor LaToya Cantrell is stressing that the city escaped the destruction suffered elsewhere.
A Category 4 hurricane slammed into our coast and sat on us for nearly 12 hours. The worst case scenario, it did not happen. We did not have another Katrina.
Cantrell says the elaborate levee system built after Hurricane Katrina protected the city as designed. Debbie Elliott, NPR News.
Ida is no longer a hurricane, but it's still threatening more flash floods and outages in much of Mississippi, Alabama, and the western Florida panhandle. Scientists say climate change is helping to fuel the kind of rapid intensification of hurricanes, as the U.S. Gulf Coast saw when Ida gained enormous strength in a short period of time. Climate scientists also tie global warming to the extreme heat that's blanketed much of the West and fueled a more active wildfire season. One of California's major wildfires, the Calder Fire, prompted an evacuation order today for the entire city of South Lake Tahoe. The mass evacuation from Kabul, Afghanistan is now down to hours, the U.S. mission formally ending tomorrow. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says thousands of Americans are out.
Of those who self-identified as Americans in Afghanistan considering leaving the country since August 14th, we have thus far received confirmation that about 6,000 have been evacuated or otherwise departed.
That's out of more than 122,000 people who the Pentagon says have been evacuated in the past month. The U.S. Department of Education has put five states on notice for barring mask mandates in schools. NPR's Corey Turner has the story.
The agency's Office for Civil Rights is investigating five states that are barring schools from requiring masks: Iowa, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Utah. At the center of the Education Department's civil rights concerns are students with disabilities who may be at heightened risk for severe illness from COVID-19. The department says its investigations will focus on whether these bans are discriminatory insofar as they prevent students with disabilities from safely returning to in-person education. The agency says it is not investigating other states with similar bans, including Texas and Florida, because those bans are not currently being enforced. Corey Turner, NPR News.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average ends the day down 55 points. You're listening to NPR News.
It's been 3 months since a cyber attack crippled the state health department's systems. And as Claire Strempel reports for KTOO, for Alaskans who need vital records, things like birth, death, and marriage certificates, it's put things on hold.
Stephanie Bukele's second son was born at home in July. When her husband went to get the birth certificate, he was told it might take up to 2 months.
Well, I said, all right, well, we're just going to wait for it.
Bukele and her family needed the birth certificate to get her son a passport. Her whole family is in Peru, and she says her mother is anxious to meet her second grandson while he's still a baby. She didn't get to meet Bukele's firstborn until he was nearly four.
But, you know, it was a month, and I didn't get anything, and I was getting a little bit anxious.
Paperwork is taking so long because the state has to fill orders for things like birth certificates and marriage licenses by hand. The cyber attack in May took out the electronic vital record system that made the process as simple as the few clicks it takes to search and print. Luckily, Bukele lives in Juneau, where there's a vital records office. She went back and got someone to process the paperwork on the spot. She said it took about 40 minutes. But that's not an option for everyone in the state.
I've been saying welcome to Vital Records 1975.
Rebecca Topol heads the vital records section. She says the slowdown is this. Instead of searching that electronic database, her staff has to search a literal vault of all the state's paperwork.
Well, you know, like there's the library archives have a big vault. We also have one here for the original records going back to 1800s, late 1800s, I guess.
The vault is in Juneau. So if someone was looking for a record anywhere else, Juneau staff probably had to search for it. Topol's section got the electronic system back up and running a few weeks ago, but she says they're still mired in a backlog.
So we literally do have piles of mail that haven't all gone through yet. They are processing them in the order that they're received. So the newest ones would go to the bottom, basically.
That's part of why they haven't turned the online order system back on yet. There's too much of a backup. She says it's been a lot of work. The state has authorized overtime hours and increased staffing to get it done. Topol estimates it could take months before services are back to normal. People like Bukele, who can walk into the office, have a chance to get records more quickly. But even so, when she went to get her son's passport, she was told there's a slowdown there, too. Federal employees said COVID-19 is to blame for that delay. So she's still waiting. And she said she can't help but wonder.
You know, maybe if I had gotten the birth certificate in a day or so, not in a month, then I wouldn't have this problem, you know?
There's still about 2 months until her trip. Anything could happen. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel for KTOO.
A local teenager has been arrested for a series of arson attacks along the Chena Hot Springs Road east of Fairbanks this summer. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Alaska State Troopers and the State Fire Marshal's Office arrested 17-year-old Jameson Gallion of Fairbanks for starting 7 fires at residential, community, and business structures along Chena Hot Springs Road since May, including the most recent fire, which destroyed the Two Rivers Lodge August 23rd. Deputy State Fire Marshal Kyle Carrington laid out key steps that led to the arrest.
Earlier this week, where we had identified an individual who had been present at multiple fires last week, both Wednesday, Thursday, and Monday morning's fire. That information led to interviews, subsequent search warrant services, and then ultimately another interview with the suspect.
Charging documents say Gallion admitted to setting the 7 fires he's charged with. The documents also detail Gallion showing up at the scene of the Two Rivers Lodge fire and surveillance video of him filling a fuel can at a local gas station shortly before the blaze started. Search warrants obtained for Gallion's house, electronics, and vehicle revealed additional digital and physical evidence. What motivated the string of arsons remains a mystery.
I don't know that we had any fixed profile for what this offender was. We were looking at any and every theory that was out there.
The randomness of the attacks with what was so perplexing to us.
State Trooper Captain Eric Spitzer likened efforts to catch the arsonist at work to trying to photograph lightning.
If I give you a camera and said, go out and find, you know, capture me a picture of a lightning strike, I want you to be within about 100 yards of it and do that. It'd be difficult because you don't know where it's going to happen next.
Galyon Olathrop High School student was arraigned Friday afternoon on first and second degree arson and other charges. He's being held at Fairbanks Youth Facility, but Fairbanks District Attorney Joe Delayer says he will be tried as an adult.
Typically speaking, most juveniles would be charged in delinquency court. But when somebody is 16 or 17 years old and has been charged with certain offenses, one of those offenses being arson in the first degree, we are permitted to charge that person as an adult in adult court. And that's what we've done here.
Delayer says bail is set at $1 million. Delayer and law enforcement say Galyon could be charged with setting other fires this summer. The arrest has ended months of fear and tension in the Two Rivers Pleasant Valley community along Chena Hot Springs Road. Local pastor and Pleasant Valley Community Association board member Bob Sugden says he does not know the suspect and is feeling a mix of emotions following the arrest.
I'm very relieved. I'm happy. I'm thrilled. I've cried. Yay, it's done. But it's not done. There's still a lot of cleanup that needs to be done, and there's still a lot of people that need to be shored up.
Sugden says Two Rivers Pleasant Valley area residents are sleeping well again after being on edge for so long.
But I am still heartsick over all of this. It makes me just so sad. But we'll get through it, and we will be stronger and better for it.
The Department of Public Safety thanks numerous state and federal law enforcement agencies for their assistance in the arson investigation, as well as area residents who they say provided countless tips and reports and, quote, patiently waited for this arrest. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The 2021 commercial chum salmon season ended last week in Kotzebue, and like most fisheries across western Alaska, the catch rate was low. KOTZ's Wesley Early has more on how local officials are handling this year's poor showing.
It hasn't been very good.
Karen Gillis is the manager of the Copper River Seafoods Processing Plant in Kotzebue, one of two commercial chum salmon buyers in town this year.
We're very disappointed this year with the amount of fishing time and, of course, the amount of fish, and I believe everybody else is too.
Gillis says fish and game officials decreased the number of hours in each daily fishing period, which she says limited fishers' ability to get their chum. She says the hesitancy for fish and game to increase the fishing periods may have been due to record rainfall up the Kobuk River.
Perhaps the high waters were confusing the numbers, that they couldn't really see what was coming upriver. And the Fish and Game also did say that they couldn't do a lot of testing because of the waters were so high. So some of the numbers out perhaps weren't accurate.
Fish and Game area biologist Jim Menard says that there was an issue with a test net upriver due to high water. The net was knocked out on July 24th, and officials were able to get it fixed 4 days later.
And by then, the water was so high, it seems we couldn't catch anything at the test net. So we just attributed that to the high water and all the flooding up there, that the net was just sailing over the fish. So once we think the net is no longer effective and giving us good information, we just go by the commercial fishery catches.
Menard says prior to the high water, catches at the test net had been at a similar rate as last year before dropping off towards late July. He says he understands the concern from commercial buyers, but he says Fish and Game has other priorities.
The number one priority is to get enough up there for escapement, and two is for subsistence. And then we'll get commercials, so we have to ratchet back the commercial to make sure we have enough up there for those people who need that for their subsistence uses.
Menard says the low chum catch rate in Kotzebue is similar to how the rest of western Alaska has been this year.
Not good in Bristol Bay as far as the chums, and, you know, though they had a credible sockeye run, the chums were not good there. We didn't have good chum runs in Kuskokwim, Yukon, Norton Sound, and so all over western Alaska, the chum salmon fared poorly this year.
Menard attributes the main issue to a poor showing of 4- and 5-year-old chums, which make up a vast majority of the fish caught.
The 2015 class was doing well, the 5-year-olds, and so when they came back in 2019 and 2020, they were fine. The 2016 class was very poor, So when that came back in 2020, it's a very low number of four-year-olds. Well, that four-year-old class from that brood year, we call it, when the eggs are in the gravel, that brood year, we know that's going to come back poor again in 2021.
Menard says Fish and Game will continue to monitor the conditions of the region and try to determine whether the causes of the poor season are from management or if it's a bigger ecological issue.
All you can do is put enough spawners on the spawning ground and then keep your fingers crossed that things are going to turn around out in the ocean.
As for the buyers, Gillis says they're hoping that next year's season will turn around. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Wesley Early.
Earlier this month, Blood Bank of Alaska said the blood shortage in the state was critical. Since then, donations have been coming in. But as Claire Strempel reports for KTOO, the group says it's still low on the life-saving fluid.
The state's only blood distributor sent out an urgent plea for blood donations in August. Blood Bank of Alaska told potential donors there was a looming shortfall in the state's inventory of blood products.
We've actually been able to supply Alaska's hospitals blood. Obviously, that's the number one concern and priority.
Wes Dahlgren is in charge of collections for the nonprofit. He says donor response to the preemptive alert has been outstanding over the last 2 weeks. But he said the need was critical. Usually, the organization has a 3 to 5 day supply on hand, but they were down to less than a day's supply of certain blood types. Dahlgren says there's still a significant need for increased donations. Usually, he says Alaska can reach out to blood banks in the lower 48 if inventory falls short. Not lately.
Given the shortage around the country, that's not possible right now. We're pretty much on our own.
Kurt Bailey runs Bloodworks Northwest, a regional blood distribution center in Washington state that's distributed blood products to Alaska in the past.
In our main storage facility, there are banks of refrigerators. And normally, one could walk into that refrigeration bank and be surrounded by shelves of blood. And now when one walks in, they're mostly empty.
Bailey says demand has increased nationwide for blood products. He attributes that in part to people who deferred surgery and other treatments during the first year of the pandemic, who are seeking care now. And that's paired with a drop in blood donations. Mobile collections units are usually cramped quarters, so his group shut them down for the pandemic.
The stocks of blood that all blood collectors like Bloodworks keeps for emergencies started to dwindle because we had to use that blood for patients who really needed it. And it's been very, very difficult to keep up.
In his region, he says providers are limiting transfusions. Dahlgren at Blood Banks of Alaska says that's not happening in this state. You can give blood regardless of COVID-19 vaccination status. BBA is collecting blood donations at the State Fair in Palmer through next month. It will resume collections in Juneau on September 7th. For KTOO, I'm Claire Strempel in Juneau.
The Kodiak Emergency Operations Center has recently released new COVID-19 case information for the Kodiak Island Borough, including 19 new cases. 92 cases are currently classified as active locally, and the current case count now is 1,591 cases. One active case is currently hospitalized in Kodiak, and one hospitalized patient was flown off island for a higher level of care. This patient had to be transferred out of state due to the unavailability of hospital beds in state. And just a reminder, a mask mandate is in effect for public indoor activities.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Eating fish can literally save lives. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Premature birth is the leading cause of death for children under 5 years old worldwide, accounting for nearly 1 million deaths annually. Eating seafood or marine oils can significantly reduce that number. The life-saving ingredient? Omega-3 fatty acids. That's the main finding of a new Cochrane review of 70 studies worldwide that included nearly 20,000 pregnant women. It showed that omegas from marine sources reduces early premature birth by a whopping 42%.
The effect really has to be strong in order to see it in a Cochrane review. And I am very impressed that it has come out as significant as it has.
Dr. Tom Brenna is a professor of pediatrics, chemistry, and nutrition at Dell Medical School at the University of Texas. Research on marine omega-3s and pregnancy has been going on since at least 1992, he says. Brenna calls the formal medical collaboration and conclusions in the Cochrane Review a blunt instrument.
The number of studies and the number of women studied is large enough so that it is very difficult to imagine that future studies, no matter how they come out, are going to affect these results.
Premature babies are at higher risk of a range of long-term conditions, including developmental delay, learning difficulties, and visual impairment. Brenna says marine-based omega-3s also improve those problems.
Many of us believe that omega-3s are important for continuing development of the neural system and of the eye.
Brenna says a challenge now is to translate the research findings on preventing premature births and other positives into health policy and wider educational outreach.
I think we have a major effect here that ought to be heralded from the rooftops.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 44. This announcement was issued 10 a.m. August 30th. The current commercial salmon fishing period in the following areas will be extended from 6 p.m. Monday, August 30th, to remain open until further notice. The Outer Karlik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Northwest Kodiak District, the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District, and the Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. The following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Tuesday, August 31st, and remain open until further notice. The Sturgeon and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District. The current commercial salmon fishing period in the following areas will close at 6 p.m. Monday, August 30th, and reopen to commercial salmon fishing for 78 hours from noon Thursday, September 2nd, until 6 p.m. Sunday, September 5th. The Outer Iakulik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Humpy Deadman section of the Alitak District, the Sikkalitik, Two-Headed, and Seven Rivers sections of the Eastside Kodiak District, and the Northeast Kodiak District. Closed water adjustments. Closed waters are reduced in Deadman Bay of the Humpy Deadman Bay section of the Alitak District until 6 p.m. Monday, August 30th, to those waters within 500 yards of salmon streams 257502, 257503, and 257504. After 6 p.m. Monday, August 30th, closed waters will return to the normal closed waters as described in regulation. Closed waters are reduced until 6 p.m. Monday, August 30th, at Humpy Cove to the stream terminus of Humpy Creek, stream number 257701 and stream number 257703. After 6 p.m. Monday, August 30th, closed waters will return to the normal closed waters as described in regulation. As previously announced, the following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Monday, August 30th, and remain open until further notice. The Duck Bay, Iyuit Bay, and Outer Katoy Bay sections of the Afognak District. There will be a 30-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Monday, August 30th, until 6 p.m. Tuesday, August 31st, in the Inner Katoy Bay section of the Afognak District. From noon Monday, August 30th, until 6 p.m. Tuesday, August 31st, closed waters within the Inner Katoy Bay section will be the ADF&G markers at Little Creek, stream number 252323, and closed waters are increased to the ADF&G markers placed by hatchery staff near Big Katoy Creek, stream number 252324. Other closed waters are shown on the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in the Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. Statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559.
It is Monday, August the 30th, year 2021. Sun rose today at 7:06. It won't set again until 9:11. That'll give us 14 hours and 5 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 34, set in 1998, and our record high was 81, set in 1919. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side. That's going to happen at 1:22 and be 3.6 feet. Followed by a high tide at 7:57 p.m. of 7.3 feet. Over on the west side, and this is Larsen Bay, you have a low tide coming up at 1:51 p.m. That's a 5.4 foot tide, followed by a high tide at 8:25 this evening of 11.2 feet. -59 degrees. It's actually gone down a degree. It's 61, though, in the tiny back porch behind the station. We're still looking for sunny skies, high near 62 today, clouding up tonight with a low around 50 overnight. Rain is likely tomorrow, mainly after 4 p.m., increasing clouds tomorrow. And for tomorrow night, heavy rain, a low of about 52 overnight tomorrow night. But then Wednesday, just a little rain on Wednesday, and then turning to just a chance of rain on Thursday night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all just saying a chance of rain. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. For today, west 15, seas to 3 feet. Tomorrow, southeast 20, seas to 5 feet. Tomorrow night, east 30, seas coming up to 6 feet on our east side. Over in the Shelikof, southwest 20 right now, seas to 5 feet. For tomorrow, northeast 20, seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow night in the Shelikof, northeast 30, seas coming up to 9 feet in the Shelikof. The city and borough clerks are seeking registered voters to serve as election workers for future elections. Election workers span the generational gap from high school students to senior citizens. And here are 5 reasons that you should be an election worker. You work side by side with your neighbors, meet new people. You'll play a vital role in the democratic process. Your community needs you. Kodiak must recruit several poll workers each year for elections to run smoothly. And it's a great opportunity to help people serve your community. And the number one reason, you get paid. It's an actual job. Contact the city clerk at 486-8636 or the borough clerk at 486-9310. Theater is back in Kodiak. Come audition for Kodiak Art Council's theater stage play of the holiday classic, Miracle on 34th Street. When a department store Santa claims he's the real Kris Kringle, his case gets taken all the way to the Supreme Court, and a little girl's belief makes all the difference in The Miracle. Directed by Jesse Marlowe, Miracle on 34th Street has roles for adults, teens, and children ages 8 and up. Auditions will take place in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium main stage on Friday, September 10th at 6 p.m. and Saturday, September 11th at 8 p.m. At 11 a.m., rather. So Friday, September 10th at 6 p.m., Saturday, September 11th at 11 a.m. And you only need to go to one audition event. You will need to have proof of vaccination against COVID-19 to be a cast member, and if you are 12 and up. Complete details are available at the Kodiak Arts Council website. That's at www.kodiakarts.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.